This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
This time must be different. That their voices could be that difference. It's the answer spoken by young and old, rich and poor, Democrat and Republican, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, gay, straight, disabled, and not disabled. Americans who sent a message to the world that we have never been just a collection of individuals or a collection of red states and blue states. We are and always will be the United States of America. It's the answer that led those who've been told for so long by so many to be cynical and fearful and doubtful about what we can achieve, to put their hands on the arc of history and bend it once more toward the hope of a better day. It's been a long time coming, but tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America. A little bit earlier this evening, I received an extraordinarily gracious call from Senator McCain. Senator McCain fought long and hard in this campaign, and he's fought even longer and harder for the country that he loves. He has endured sacrifices for America that most of us cannot begin to imagine. We are better off for the service rendered by this brave and selfless leader. I congratulate him. I congratulate Governor Palin for all that they've achieved. And I look forward to working with them to renew this nation's promise in the months ahead. I want to thank my partner in this journey, a man who campaigned from his heart and spoke for the men and women he grew up with on the streets of Scranton and rode with on the train home to Delaware, the Vice President-elect of the United States, Joe Biden. And I would not be standing here tonight without the unyielding support of my best friend for the last 16 years, the rock of our family, the love of my life, the nation's next First Lady, Michelle Obama. Sasha and Malia, I love you both more than you can imagine, and you have earned the new puppy that's coming with us to the White House. And while she's no longer with us, I know my grandmother's watching, along with the family that made me who I am. I miss them tonight. I know that my debt to them is beyond measure. To my sister Maya, my sister Alma, all my other brothers and sisters, thank you so much for all the support that you've given me. I'm grateful to them. To my campaign manager. To my campaign manager, David Plouffe. The unsung hero of this campaign, who built the best political campaign, I think, in the history of the United States of America. To my chief strategist, David Axelrod, who's been a partner with me every step of the way. To the best campaign team ever assembled in the history of politics, you made this happen, and I am forever grateful for what you've sacrificed to get it done. But above all, I will never forget who this victory truly belongs to.
It belongs to you.
It belongs to you.
I was never the likeliest candidate.
It belongs to you. I was never the likeliest candidate for this office.
Our campaign was not.
We didn't start with much money or many endorsements. Our campaign was not hatched in the halls of Washington. It began in the backyards of Des Moines, in the living rooms of Concord, and the front porches of Charleston. It was built by working men and women who dug into what little savings they had to give $5 and $10 and $20 to the cause. It grew strength from the young people who rejected the myth of their generation's apathy, who left their homes and their families for jobs that offered little pay and less sleep. It drew strength from the not-so-young people who braved the bitter cold and scorching heat to knock on doors of perfect strangers, and from the millions of Americans who volunteered and organized and proved that more than two centuries later, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people has not perished from the earth. This is your victory. Now, I know you didn't do this just to win an election. And I know you didn't do it for me. You did it because you understand the enormity of the task that lies ahead. For even as we celebrate tonight, we know the challenges that tomorrow will bring are the greatest of our lifetime. Two wars, a planet in peril, the worst financial crisis in a century. Even as we stand here tonight, we know there are brave Americans waking up in the deserts of Iraq and the mountains of Afghanistan to risk their lives for us. There are mothers and fathers who will lie awake after their children fall asleep and wonder how they'll make the mortgage, or pay their doctor's bills, or save enough for their child's college education. There's new energy to harness, new jobs to be created, new schools to build, and threats to meet, alliances to repair. The road ahead will be long. Our climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term. But America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you, we as a people will get there. Starts. There are many who won't agree with every decision or policy I make as president. And we know the government can't solve every problem. But I will always be honest with you about the challenges we face. I will listen to you, especially when we disagree. And above all, I will ask you to join in the work of remaking this nation the only way it's been done in America for 221 years. Block by block, brick by brick, calloused hand by calloused hand. What began 21 months ago in the depths of winter cannot end on this autumn night. This victory alone is not the change we seek. It is only the chance for us to make that change. And that cannot happen if we go back to the way things were. It can't happen without you, without a new spirit of service, a new spirit of sacrifice. So let us summon a new spirit of patriotism, of responsibility, where each of us resolves to pitch in and work harder and look after not only ourselves but each other. Let us remember that if this financial crisis taught us anything, it's that we cannot have a thriving Wall Street while Main Street suffers. In this country, we rise or fall as one nation, as one people. Let's resist the temptation to fall back on the same partisanship and pettiness and immaturity that has poisoned our politics for so long. the Republican Party. Let's remember that it was a man from this state who first carried the banner of the Republican Party to the White House, a party founded on the values of self-reliance and individual liberty and national unity. Those are values that we all share. And while the Democratic Party has won a great victory tonight, we do so with a measure of humility and determination to heal the divides that have held back our progress. As Lincoln said to a nation far more divided than ours, we are not enemies, but friends. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. And to those Americans whose support I have yet to earn, I may not have won your vote tonight, but I hear your voices. I need your help, and I will be your president, too. And all those watching tonight from beyond our shores, from parliaments and palaces, to those who are huddled around radios in the forgotten corners of the world, our stories are singular, but our destiny is shared. And a new dawn of American leadership is at hand. To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you. To those who seek peace and security, we support you. And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we prove once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope. That's the true genius of America, that America can change. Our union can be perfected. What we've already achieved gives us hope for what we can and must achieve tomorrow. This election had many firsts and many stories that will be told for generations, but one that's on my mind tonight is about a woman who cast her ballot in Atlanta. She is a lot like the millions of others who stood in line to make their voice heard in this election, except for one thing. Ann Nixon Cooper is 106 years old. She was born just a generation past slavery, a time when there were no cars on the road or planes in the sky, when someone like her couldn't vote for two reasons, because she was a woman and because of the color of her skin. And tonight, I think about all that she's seen throughout her century in America. The heartache and the hope, the struggle and the progress. The times we were told that we can't, and the people who pressed on with that American creed, yes, we can. At a time when women's voices were silenced and their hopes dismissed, she lived to see them stand up and speak out and reach for the ballot. Yes, we can. When there was despair in the Dust Bowl and depression across the land, she saw a nation conquer fear itself with a new deal, new jobs, a new sense of common purpose. Yes, we can. When the bombs fell on our harbor and tyranny threatened the world, she was there to witness a generation rise to greatness and a democracy was saved. Yes, we can. She was there for the buses in Montgomery, the hoses in Birmingham, a bridge in Selma, and a preacher from Atlanta who told the people that we shall overcome. Yes, we can. A man touched down on the moon. A wall came down in Berlin. A world was connected by our own science and imagination. And this year, in this election, she touched her finger to a screen and cast her vote. Because after 106 years in America, through the best of times and the darkest of hours, she knows how America can change. Yes, we can. America, we have come so far. We have seen so much. But there's so much more to do. So tonight, let us ask ourselves, if our children should live to see the next century, if my daughters should be so lucky to live as long as Ann Nixon Cooper, what change will they see? What progress will we have made? This is our chance to answer that call. This is our moment. This is our time to put our people back to work and open doors of opportunity for our kids, to restore prosperity and promote the cause of peace, to reclaim the American dream and reaffirm that fundamental truth that out of many we are one, that while we breathe, we hope, and where we are met with cynicism and doubt and those who tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
To the crowd in Grant Park in Chicago, estimates are up to 1 million people are there. The first African-American president of the United States will be the 44th president. Senator Joe Biden, his running mate, the vice president-elect, is now joining him. They're hugging. American flags are being waved by many people in the crowd. They're waving to the crowd. Jackson is in the crowd. Reverend Jesse Jackson and his son, Congressman Jesse Jackson. We've seen Oprah Winfrey in the crowd, of course, another Chicago resident. Millions of people who've come from the area and beyond. The music to Rocky playing in the background. Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., is crying as he's looking up at the stage, and now Jill and Michelle, Jill Biden and Michelle Obama, have walked out holding hands and are now all four are hugging each other. Shouting and waving and taking pictures. That does it for tonight's broadcast. Tomorrow, Democracy Now! Will be joining you for a special expanded 2-hour broadcast from 8 to 10 in the morning, Eastern Standard Time. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shrufa Bokadu, Saren Mate, Anjali Kamat, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, and Peter Curries are our intrepid engineers. Special thanks also to Becca Staley, Hugh Grant, Angie Kiefer, Samantha Chamblee, Jessel Noor, John Randolph, Jose Miranda, Laura Chipley, Nick Gilla, Travis Collins, Isis Phillips, and condolences on the loss of your grandmother, Isis. Vesta Godars, Rabia Alghani, Brenda Murad, Julie Crosby, Karen Renucci, Neil Shibata, the whole family of the Obamas and the Bidens have now come out. Also, thanks to Nicole Martin and Daniel Summers and Jonathan Summers and Simon Epstein and everyone who has made this broadcast possible. We couldn't have done it without the whole Democracy Now! Family. Thanks also to our hosts tonight, to Jeremy Scahill and to Laura Flanders, to our colleagues at Free Speech TV, to Dennis Moynihan and Malia and Than and Nate and Mike, to our allies at Common Dreams and Alternet, to the nation, and over at the Huffington Post, at michaelmoore.com. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez and Jeremy Scahill. Thanks so much for joining us.
(clears throat) 21 minutes after the hour on listener supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Thank you, Amy. The long national nightmare is over.
Roots come. Kenya.
I have a dream that one day this great nation,
all the voters in America, Barack Obama be thy name. Thy change shall come, thy will be done, as it is in American dream. We sing again, all the voters on America, Obama be thy name. Thy change shall come, thy will be done, as it is in American dream. It is Obama for the White House, all the way from Illinois. Washington D.C., open your doors for Barack Obama, for a change in America. It is a change in Africa, Australia, Asia, Europe, South America. Barack Obama, it is Obama in Florida, all the way to Chicago, New York City, Hollywood, New Jersey, Texas. Barack Obama, from California to New Mexico, New Orleans to Hawaii, Alaska, Arizona to Miami, all over America, Barack Obama. And if you're voting for the real change, Barack Obama be the right man. Whether you're black or white, you're young or old, vote Barack. Barack Obama. Whether you're black or white, you're young or old, vote Barack. Barack Obama.
Yeah. I have a dream that one day this great nation,
all the voters of America, Barack Obama be thy name. The change shall come, thy will be done, as it is in American dream. We sing again, all the voters of America, Barack Obama be thy name. The change shall come, thy will be done, as it is in American dream. It is Obama for the White House, all the way from Illinois, Washington D.C. Open the gates for Barack Obama to bring the change in Washington D.C. Barack Obama, show us the way for Delaware, Minnesota, Missouri to Connecticut. Barack Obama, it is Obama in Michigan, all the way to Colorado, Mississippi, Maryland, Iowa, Indiana, and Utah. Barack Obama, from Louisiana to the Oregon, West Virginia to Ohio, Alabama, Oklahoma, Montana, all over America, it is Obama. And if you're voting for the real change, Barack Obama be the right man. Whether you're black or white, you're young or old, vote Barack. Barack Obama,
Whether you're black or white, you're young or old, vote Barack, Barack Obama.
I have a dream that one day this nation.
Kentucky to Virginia, Nevada to Nebraska, from Arkansas to Kansas, Obama be thy name. Thy change shall come, thy will be done, as it is in American dream. Me sing again. Carolina to Wyoming, Maine to Rhode Island, Hampshire to Wisconsin, Obama be thy name. Thy change shall come, thy will be done, as it is in American dream. Me sing again. Idaho to Dakota, Pennsylvania to Tennessee, Georgia to Washington, everybody in Massachusetts, Obama be thy name. Thy change shall come, thy will be done, as it is in American dream. All the voters in America, all the brothers in America, and all the sisters in America, all the Jews in America, all the Christians in America, Arabs in America, Africans in America, all the Indians in America, Hispanics in America, Obama be thy name. The change shall come, thy will be done, as it is in American dream. The change shall come, thy will be done, as it is in American dream. We sing again. The change shall come, thy will be done, as it is in American dream.
Support for Barack Obama, the Democratic presidential candidate in the United States. Vote Barack Obama. Vote good change. God bless you.
In America, blessing is all.
technical glitches. What a drag. What a drag. Okay, let's go to the previous cut. Why don't we do that?
Obama, ubarikiwe. Obama, ubarikiwe. Hip hop meets Roomba. Let's go.
Let's go.
Go. Everybody stand up. New leader in the game. New era, new vision. It's time for a change. Let's use our heads, not warheads. No more thugs selling dope. For brothers seeing hope. Change is in the air. I see it right here. No more division, hate, and despair. Take a step to change. Do what you gotta do. They don't know, but now I'ma give them a clue. Everybody, it's time to take a stand. Yes, we can.
Uongozi baba niki power upewa na Mungu. Wewe unacho. Leta amani mabadiliko matumaini. Wamarekani na walimwengu. Tumekupenda. Wamarekani na walimwengu. Tumekupenda.
Here we go again.
Leta amani mabadiliko matumaini. Wamarekani na walimwengu. Tumekupenda. Wamarekani na walimwengu. Tumekupenda.
Trio of homages in song from Kenya to the new president-elect of the United States, Barack Obama. That was Obama Ubarakiwe, which translates from the Swahili as Obama Be Blessed by an artist by the name of Samba Mapangala. And before that, we heard Obama for Change by the group Kenge Kenge. And opening up at the top there at Obama Be Thy Name by a group called Maka Dem, a Kenyan Afrofusion and reggae artist. Maka Dem. So interesting stuff. Amazing what you'll find on YouTube, eh? And, they're sure celebrating in Kenya tonight. And let me tell you, when I was biking down here to the station, McCain gave his concession speech while I was en route from my apartment to the station on my bicycle, and it felt like New Year's Eve out there. Everybody was honking their horns, and no matter what you think of it, we witnessed history tonight. Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome aboard, everybody out there in Radio Land, and welcome aboard to Marisol Ruiz and Kazembe Balogun and Russell Dale and Jana Ridanova, if I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Jana Ridanova.
And Bill Conline of the Brecht Forum and associated other conglomerations, outfits, or just individuals, right? We're just all here to...
Theater of the Oppressed Laboratory.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Theater of the Oppressed Laboratory.
There you go.
Which is affiliated with the Brecht Forum.
There you go. And, well, we're all just here to schmooze and party tonight. So, any thoughts, folks?
Wow.
I was walking across my block on the way to the subway to come down here.
Uh-huh.
And exactly as you said, we don't have much on the block. At either end of the block, there's a bar and another bar. There was a hairdresser. He had his shop open. There must have been 30 people on the floor. They're drinking. They have champagne. You could hear from blocks away people shouting, screaming, celebrating. I've never seen anything like this with a political campaign.
Yeah. Oh, no, of course not. Of course not. No.
I remember when Clinton won, people being happy, but not.
No comparison.
No comparison.
Absolutely. It's just jubilation out there. You know, it's strange. I actually have got one friend in New York City who's a McCain supporter. just one. And, you know, so obviously, I mean, here in New York City, and I'm sure in Chicago and in San Francisco and most of the big urban centers around the country, people are literally dancing in the streets. And we just saw the images on the TV screen on New York One right here of exactly that from Chicago. But, you know, you look at the map of which states went blue and which states went red. And, well, there's obviously a lot more blue states this time than there were in 2004. But the country is still pretty divided along the same geographical lines as the gray and blue of the Civil War.
That's right.
And it's so one wonders what we're heading into here. Mm. It's going to be a different world, that's for sure. Mm. It's going to be a different world. So Kazembe, I know you voted for Obama, and because you were quite open about it. I know you were supporting him. And yet you consider yourself to be a revolutionary communist, and you're named after, I assume, you took your name from the black nationalist and anarchist political prisoner who died in the gulags of America several years back, Kwesi Balogun. Why don't you give us a perspective on what brought you to a revolutionary communist standpoint, in your own words, to supporting Barack Obama, and what kind of situation you see us headed into now?
Well, I have to be honest. I ended up not voting for Obama.
Oh, okay.
I ended up voting for Gloria Riva, the Party for Socialism Liberation, only because I looked at the stats and I knew Obama was going to win New York City. And it's important to support third-party candidates at the same time. But I do understand this historical moment, and I think that there's a certain zeitgeist that Obama represents. I think that right now Obama represents a complete repudiation of the whole entire 8 years of Bush and what McCain represented, the possibility of continuing that. And I think that the country, you mentioned earlier before that, you know, the divisions between the countries, and I think that the country is completely different landscape right now than in 2000, even in the times of Clinton. I think that, you know, there's been tremendous amount of push and drive culturally in terms of the way people think about race and gender and sexuality, and I think that in a lot of ways there's been a whole entire new opening that exists right now that can allow a person like Barack Obama to be elected to be president of the United States. And I think that that's directly impacted and influenced by a lot of the groundwork of social forces. And basically, I think that, you know, there was a play on both the social forces and electoral forces that brought Barack Obama to this point right now. It was a complete grassroots effort. I mean, millions of dollars raised. I mean, literally. I mean, I just came from a Transport Workers Union, Local 100, and they made over 100,000 phone calls today to various swing states. I mean, this is like a tremendous amount of grassroots effort in populism. And I think that, you know, that gives us a lot of hope into seeing that what's possible right now. And I think that on a larger level, we have to really look not only at tonight, but be also beyond tonight and think about what does this victory mean in terms of our perspectives, in terms of the left, in terms of a new opening, in terms of the struggles that we need to take care of right now, because January 21st, we still got to talk about the war, we still got to talk about health care, we still got to talk about the economy, and how do we push these things forward.
War is in the plural, I'm afraid.
Yeah, wars. You know?
And
you know,
and as in even putting the absolute best face on it, you know, given that we've become so accustomed to cynicism, and for very good reason, over the past generation, even putting the absolute best face on it, even, you know, as with FDR in the Depression, I mean, what sort of pushed FDR to and enabled him to implement his program was a lot of grassroots pressure from below and from the left, and the fact that, you know, workers were taking over factories in Detroit and shutting down San Francisco and all that sort of thing. I mean, there wouldn't have been any New Deal if it hadn't been for that kind of mobilization. Okay. So,
but interestingly, the people who voted for FDR and put him into office were not the ones who ended up putting pressure on the ground on FDR to pass the New Deal. The people who you're talking about who put that kind of political pressure by political agitation were not the mainstream Democrat voters of 1932, but people who voted for more left-wing candidates in very many of these cases. So it's not simply a matter of you had a movement for FDR, and that same movement then went on the ground and forced the New Deal to come about. And I think the same thing has to happen here as well. I think that the campaign of Obama has to turn into a political movement behind Obama and pressuring Obama, and not just going home now and feeling happy that Obama has won. It will take the kind of political agitation you're talking about to get any of these things, to end the wars and to do something about the economy, but I'm not 100% sure it's going to come out of exactly those people who just elected Obama.
Yeah, don't forget too that when FDR was sworn in, we already had 3 years of depression. I don't think this current depression or recession, whatever it's going to be, it's hit Wall Street. It hasn't hit us, not yet.
Well, not all of us, but some of us, yeah.
Yeah. But you know, I think the fact that FDR went into his administration with 3 years of
that's really a big difference, of course. Yeah. Russell, I'm curious, which other candidates? I'm trying to think who ran in 1932 on the left. I mean, Eugene Debs.
Wendell Willkie was the Republican.
Right, exactly.
Candidate, yeah.
Well, we're talking about the people on the left who didn't vote for FDR. Who would they have voted for in 1932?
Actually, I don't know.
Probably Norman Thomas, I guess, on the socialist.
Probably William G. Foster too. Yeah.
And did the communists run the candidates?
Yeah.
You know,
but I think the big thing right now is that the expectations have changed, and I think that one thing I'm looking forward to is like thinking about, particularly among black people, that expectations among black people have been going to be radically different now, you know, because now you're going to be at, say, have a situation whereas when we come against things like police brutality, when we come against like basic disrespecting the street or whatever, then the answer is going to be like, no, you can't talk to me like that. No, we got a black president. You know, saying like, you know, you can't do what you usually do because we got a black president now. You know, saying so like I think that, and particularly amongst, I would pay anything right now to be a high school student because like, you know, just being Times Square, just coming from Times Square, and I just saw like 50, 75 high school students just all rushing in saying, yes, we did. You know, I mean, that is just simply, like, amazing on so many different levels. I mean, I think that the expectations are so high right now that a lot of things are possible. You know what I'm saying? And I think that, you know, and I think, you know, in you know, we need to play it right. You know, this is an historical moment right now. You know, one that has probably never seen in years. I mean, when you think about it, 40 years ago, Dr. King said, you know, I've been to the mountaintop. You know what I'm saying? And 40 years later, you have a situation where we have a president-elect who's African-American. So this is a very exciting time, obviously.
All right. So when you say, you know, we got to do the right thing now, what does that constitute in your mind?
Well, like for me, I mean, for the right thing is actually like acknowledging the moment of the change. But then on another level too, really kind of understanding what the extra step of democracy is. Because democracy is not just simply voting in the ballot box or wearing a button or a pen or a slogan or whatever. That extra step of democracy is actually trying to influence policy and influence decision-making on the streets. Because the thing about it is right now is that even in the current moment that we're celebrating, we need to take that energy against Bloomberg. You know what I'm saying? You know, and because, you know, Bloomberg, you know, if I can bring it down to New York City for a second, you know, Bloomberg represents a certain financial capital that is exercising a tremendous amount of power in New York City, you know, in terms of rent regulation laws, in terms of education, in terms of healthcare, and a lot of other things. And we need to step up the game about that. We need to step up the game against possible budget cuts by the governor. You know, and I think those are the levels of challenges that we need to really kind of face right now. So it was like the question is, how do we take this optimism, how do we take this excitement and this level of expectation, and we try to transform it? Because I think that we can take it to 2009 and beat Bloomberg back, you know, I think that that would even be even an extra step forward in terms of people's movements and us really kind of creating some sort of, you know, truly democratic society.
Just on the fact check tip here, correct, consulting the internet, following Eugene Debs' death in 1926, Norman right. Thomas became uh-huh. the socialist standard bearer and was the party's presidential nominee in every election from 1928 to 1948.
Ooh. Any numbers on what the percentage
is? Well, I'd have to dig a little bit more deeper.
I just want to make a comment on what Kazembe is saying here. You know, the question Bill asked is how are we going to do that? Like, how we just spent $1.5 billion was just spent on a campaign, the most expensive in American history, and $1.5 billion is capable of putting lots of ads on television. And mobilizing young people with highly well-articulated, engineered propaganda and emotional appeals. What do we do now that we don't have that $1.5 billion to keep them politically active?
Mm.
That's the question. You know, it's not, yes, everything you just said is true, but how do we make that transition now that we lose the $1.5 billion of funding that got people? That was such an important factor in raising the level of excitement for the youth of this country who have become so enamored of Obama.
Marisol. Algunas perspectivas?
Yes.
Por favor.
Yeah, mine is very short. It is expressed in the following way. The oppressed are allowed once every few years to decide which particular representative of the oppressing class are to represent and repress them. Karl Marx. That's it.
That's certainly true. It's an unarguable statement. I will say in response, though, that the unfortunate tendency towards lesser evilism, which has prevailed, you know, particularly over the course of the past generation, that the Democratic Party has just been in supine retreat from the Reagan ideological assault, You know, that that stance of, you know, just dumbing our expectations down and constantly feeling that we're captive to the Democratic Party, because otherwise, you know, the world is going to end and the Republicans are going to get in. And yet the Democratic Party starts to look more and more each time like the Republican Party. Well, yes, but on the other side of the coin, I mean, acknowledged that that tendency exists and is very, very dangerous. On the other side of the coin, you know, sort of this knee-jerk, they're all the same-ism, I'm not sure is any less pathological than knee-jerk lesser evil-ism. And I do think that we've turned an ideological corner in this country for the first time since 1980. And that is not to say that the Democratic Party is not a a party of the rich and of corporate power. It certainly continues to be. But I do think that a new there's the potential, at least, I think great potential, for a new social contract or a new social consensus to be conformed to be consolidated now in the context of the capitalist system, just as one was in 1932 and just as one was in 1980.
So yeah, I think, too, that at this historical moment, the deficiencies of Obama's politics is irrelevant. It's not irrelevant, but it's not predominant. It's people's perceptions of what Obama's all about. Will he bring change? Yeah, he'll bring some. I don't think he'll bring a lot, not the change I want to see. But I think for the masses of people, They perceive we did it. We made change. Time for a change, and they really perceive Obama as the bringer of change, and that perception is very important. I don't think there's been maybe Kennedy in 1960 had the same charisma, the same social movement behind him, but there's been nothing like him since.
So where did Kazembe go? Kazembe Kazembe went elsewhere. Okay, Jana Ridanova, any perspectives you'd like to share with us?
Well, I think you were talking about Obama as an individual, and from that point, I could, you know, imagine some change. But when you actually see the people around Obama, like, you know, he absorbed the people from Democratic Party, like. As Zbigniew Brzezinski, Albright, and I really fear these people. I mean, you see their history. So I really sorry, but I'm not. I don't see any change there. I mean,
see any change.
Well, yeah.
Everything you said up to that point, I totally agreed with. But
yeah. Well, in political sense, I mean, what can we expect? I mean, yeah, there is a change that African American became a president, and that's a big change. Okay, but
I really don't think that the change is limited merely to the color of Obama's skin. I
think what you're responding to is that there is a change in the people, but it sounds like you're thinking that the change in the people's enthusiasm for the political process this time out doesn't amount to what you called an ideological change a moment ago. Where is the ideological change that you mentioned? I don't see that. I agree with Jana here. I don't see that either. I don't see that there's really a turning point in ideology.
Well, hang on a minute. If you just had Alan Greenspan admitting there were flaws in my ideology, quote unquote, I basically had it wrong for the past 40 years. Oops.
After
40 years of Reaganism and you know, deregulation and just let the pigs run wild, we've just had massive state intervention in the economy as a matter of necessity. And look, Zbigniew Brzezinski is a very dangerous character, but if you read some of his recent screeds on Bush foreign policy and the Bush doctrine and Iraq and Afghanistan and so on, he sounds like Noam Chomsky. Okay, he's been a very, very harsh critic of the Bush administration's adventurism and unilateralism. I don't think it's this is not to exonerate Zbigniew Brzezinski. But I don't think it's at all fair to say that it doesn't represent any ideological change. I think it represents a very radical ideological change.
No, it represents the same thing that the Democratic foreign policy has always represented with regard to Republican foreign policy, which is a mere tactical difference in some of the procedures, but it's not a fundamental. There's not been a fundamental change in Brzezinski's attitude. Brzezinski has not apologized for his intervention in Afghanistan or called it wrong, and Alan Greenspan's hand wringing doesn't amount to a serious change in his free market ideology. He just said he misunderstood what was going to happen.
He said, quote unquote, there were flaws in my ideology.
Right. Yeah, he misunderstood what he was getting into.
All right. So you don't think that this is at least potentially a sort of a political paradigm shift on the scale of 1980 or 1932?
Now you're saying a different thing. I'm disagreeing with there being an ideological shift.
But there was an ideological shift in those 2 years.
Hold on. Now you're asking whether there's a political paradigm shift. The political paradigm could be changing right now. That is true. And that means on the ground, we were saying earlier, young people are more enthusiastic today than they've been for a very long time, and that is a political change. That's a political difference. That's not an ideological difference. And the people,
right, but if there wasn't
the people in power mm-hmm. are actually ideologically the same people. Robert Rubin and both McCain and Obama have talked about Warren Buffett as a possible Secretary of the Treasury. I mean, we're talking about. I don't think it's just knee jerk. They're both the sameism. I think we're talking about they're both the same. that there's strong evidence of that. Of course, there are subtle differences between them, I grant it, but I don't see dramatic differences, and I certainly don't see that there's an ideological change. I think that the young people who have flexed their political muscle for the first time in their life in many cases are hopeful and really should be brought into the political process in stronger.
Okay, but you feel that all of their enthusiasm, which you seem to be looking to with a certain degree of hope, is based on a complete illusion.
Whether or not it's a complete illusion is going to be a matter for the future to see. What we have to go on right now, what Obama has stood for and said up till now in the campaign, doesn't give me much hope that he's going to be quite different. He talked in his acceptance speech just a little while ago about how he was funded by a grassroots movement. Well, the fact of the matter is 20% of his campaign was funded by grassroots people, and 80% of his campaign were funded by Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers before they went out of business, Archer Daniels Midland, and he raised over $1 billion in order to fight this fight.
Although I will also point out that McCain got way more money from the oil industry. They both got money from the oil industry, but McCain got more by an order of magnitude.
Yeah, well, it may be the case, but Obama got more from the ethanol, the alternative sham industry that has, from the beginning of his political career, been behind him.
Amazingly, nobody is calling in. I wonder if we should open up the lines and see if anybody wants to join this conversation at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg. We are in the studio with Marisol Ruiz, Kazembe Balogun, Russell E. Dale, Yana Ridanova, and Bill Conlon. And Kazembe, it pains me to have to bring this up, but I feel obliged. I'm going to keep it brief. If you had said that you had voted for the Socialist Party or the Green Party or the Socialist Workers Party or just about any of the other alternative parties out there, I would have said, fine, no problem. But the Party for Socialism and Liberation is pretty evil. They really are. I mean, you're aware, of course, that they're an offshoot from the Workers' World Party, and essentially have the same politics as the Workers' World Party, and they're, you know, big fans of brutal genocidal tyrants all over the world, Saddam Hussein, Slobodan Milosevic, et cetera, et cetera.
But there was no chance of them even winning, and my vote doesn't count
anyway.
Why not vote for the Green Party? You know, because the thing about it is, like, I just like the name. You know what I'm saying? And, like, you know, like, I don't really care.
Come on.
You know what I'm saying? The same way people vote for Obama, you know? You know, I thought it was a cool name.
Well,
you know?
It is a cool name, but, you know, more Majority was a cool name, too, because that name.
You know, it doesn't take a lot for me, you know?
Boy.
But I got to say But, you know, I got
to
say one thing, like, one interesting thing about this election, I think...
Talk to the mic, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. One interesting thing about this election, and you talk about ideology, and I think one of the things that's really interesting is that there was this war against the 60s.
Yeah.
Within this campaign.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? And the ghost of the 60s kind of haunted this campaign, with, you know, through Reverend Wright and Bill Ayers. And I'm wondering, in terms of the changes, in terms of the ideological changes, what does that mean in terms of that particular period still having that influence that it once did, or would it continue having influence, or would there be a rejection of that and something new would pop up in the face of this Obama victory? You know, because I think a lot of the values of the, you know, were challenged, you know, a lot of different ways, you know, and so, I mean, I just wanted to bring that up, you know, in terms of that kind of conversation piece, in terms of, like, this kind of talk about ideology and, like, how do these kind of...
Zeitgeist. Symbols, absolutely, it all matters. There's people calling in. Should we plunge into the unknown?
Oh, yeah.
WBAI, you're on the air. Speak up. Turn down your radio and speak up.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you, Bill, for one more really, really energizing dialogue.
Thank you.
As you so you have us so used to providing for us.
Well, please add to it.
Brief and to the point. Make no mistake about it. Obama is an accidental president. He's an unqualified opportunist. Hillary ruined it for the Democrats. She ran interference and bumped off all the other qualified candidates. Enough said.
Thank you, Bill.
I wonder who some of the qualified Democratic candidates.
Well, Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich.
All right, should we keep going? WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello. Turn down the radio. Turn down the radio and speak up. You're
so
on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Speak up.
I'm with you. Listen, what I wanted to ask is are there any revolutionary psychiatrists or psychologists who are ready to take advantage of the pumped up people who are out in the street celebrating for what reason I can't even figure out because they got to go to work tomorrow?
I think the entire profession of psychiatry is inherently counter-revolutionary.
Right.
Okay, pick the time that you want, but we need someone in order
except
to
maybe R.D. Lang.
Yeah, I was thinking that to myself.
No, but I think the point was, you know, who's going
to have looking for something to heal the people so that they'll be able to take the revolution that you want to do, because currently what I see is people who are panicked, who are so oppressed that they're not even aware that they're oppressed, that they only react out of fear and desperation, and whatever it is that they cling to, this everyday trading money for time, thinking that the money that they get compensates them for the time that they give. Look at what's happened since 72. There hasn't been a pay raise in this country since 1972. And I just watched, forgive me for even mentioning it, Fox News, the subtle racism. No, I mean, I'm talking about over broadcast. I mean, I don't get to see the cable thing, which must really blow people's minds. But the subtle racism that is still smiling faces, just wonderful, good old people of European descent saying, why did you let this person get this close to our power? You know, it's like crazy stuff, but...
Okay, is this a paraphrase, or is this close to the verbatim?
What the gentleman said was the reason that Barack Obama got elected was because of the overwhelming black vote and the youth vote. that translates for me to the 60s gone on steroids.
Yep. The black vote represented 13% of the entire vote.
Exactly. I mean, youth
or maybe new voters, first-time voters was 10%.
It still doesn't cut any ice when you look at the Barack Obama crowd in Lincoln Park or whatever that park was, and it was like 60, 70% people of European descent screaming, yes, we can. Yes, we can what?
Well, we're going to find out.
All right. No. What I'm saying is Bill, without some kind of, I'm going to use a phrase, so please don't beat me up on it, but some kind of help to change the mindset so that they can be intensely fortified for the struggle that comes about. I mean, people are talking about food riots in the United States. I don't know about you, but I know that people of color usually suffer very severely when people of European descent don't have jobs. People get hung from trees. They get run over by cars. You get claimed for doing things that you have no power in. I mean, I'm screaming. I'm sorry. Please. I need to help to everybody else.
Right. There's a lot of other people calling. So if you got a point.
Please, one more thing. If you have a 501c3, use Good Search to put your charity in, WBAI.
I know. We got to think about doing that. That's true. Thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi.
I've been thinking all night tonight about a friend of mine who was one of the first black women to go around and start registering voters in South Carolina. And although I'm not much in, as you well know, Bill, a big supporter of the U.S. electoral system, I do think that this is something amazing if you looked at it from her eyes, when you would have to risk your life to go out and try to start registering votes, and how many years all of that stuff went on with Strom Thurmond, and just the fact that I wish she was alive today to see a black man elected president, because of I just think that if nothing else, it's going to heal a little bit of the racial division in the country, and I think that if nothing else, it's a good thing for that. And I've been thinking what she would have felt tonight, because she really did risk her life for many years to change the political system in South Carolina, and this for her would have been like going dying and going to heaven and meeting Jesus. So if nothing else, I think it's good for that.
And there's the ghosts of many freedom riders in the late 50s and early 60s who died going down south from the north, who were killed by the Klan, who were lynched, and this has vindicated them.
WBAI, you're on the air. Speak up, please. We don't have time. Come on.
Hello?
Hi.
This BAI?
Yes.
Yeah, I like to comment on the Bravo Bunker, right?
Please do.
Yeah, I don't think his economic policy is going to be any different than the previous policy, because Robert Rubin, who I know personally because I worked on Wall Street for like 5 years, and Robert Rubin and Goldman Sachs has contributed heavy to their campaign.
We made that point.
Yeah, because I think Goldman Sachs is number two contributor, and Lehman Brothers is number nine. So I think the policy is going to be, just about the same. I would have voted for the independent party because they got a better economic platform, where they want to put, a moratorium on the mortgages, have the bankruptcy court be able to reduce these, ARMs, those mortgage skyrocketing mortgages. But, I mean, I don't think that Obama's going to be able to do anything that much more different. Like you said, it's going to be like, he might do some things as far as like war in Iraq. He might try to bring back the troops back out of there. But basically, economic policy is going to basically be the same, So I don't know what kind of hope.
Stay tuned.
Excuse me?
Stay tuned. We're going to find out. Just keep breathing and we'll find out, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Find out, right?
Turn down the radio and speak up. Hello.
Hi, this is Lisa calling from Long Island.
Hi.
Hi, I just wanted to share my thoughts and my experience watching tonight happen.
Please do.
I was watching with a bunch of other Hofstra students. Everyone was so excited. They were so inspired. I'm a young person. I'm a first-time caller to WBAI. I am active. I am involved, and I'm getting educated. And I think I'm representative of a lot of young people who are realizing now that this is the time in our country to actually pay attention, to follow up on the bailouts. And I think that Barack's words were incredibly inspirational. And, I mean, some people are complaining and saying that, oh, he's just going to be a centrist president and things aren't really going to change. And if you go into this his new term thinking that, yeah, that's what's going to happen. But if we actually work together, and I don't know how I'm going to be able to do that, and I'm hoping BAI will help me figure out how to do that, we can actually see change. Like, the majority of the country is now thinking, yes, we can. And that's the first step to actually creating change in this country. And I'm ready for it to happen.
Okay, thank you very much. WBAI, you're on the air. Oh, no, you're not. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello. Well, you know, this might be politically incorrect, but I think today's a very sad day.
Okay, why?
Well, because the last time an African-American was put into a high position was Colin Powell. We went on to kill millions of people all over the world.
What has that got to do with Barack Obama? Barack Obama's not Colin Powell.
Oh, no?
No.
I think you're wrong about that. I think it's the same thing.
Okay, on the basis of what?
On the basis of the fact that he voted to finance the war all the way through. He said he was against the war, but he financed it, so how can you be against the war that you financed?
Well, he opposed going in at the beginning.
He financed every...
Well, I didn't say he voted against it. I said he opposed it. Mm. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he said, I'm against the war, but I'm financing the war. So that means you're not against the war if you're financing it. If you're sending the money to the war, that's only... It's only hyperbole to say you're against the war if you're financing it. If you're against the war, you don't finance it. You vote against...
All right, a point.
Appropriation.
A point, yes.
So I'm saying he's a warmonger. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, he's complicit. I'm not so sure he's a warmonger. He's complicit.
Well, he's certainly not giving us any concrete plan for how we're going to get out of Iraq.
He's not
going to
get out of Iraq. He's going to leave he's going to leave most of the troops there. He's going to bring home...
And Blackwater.
And
he's going to keep Blackwater there.
And he's going to leave Blackwater and all the mercenaries are staying. 150,000 mercenaries are staying.
Yeah, and they'll keep 80,000 troops in Iraq.
That's
and he'll
right.
add more troops to
That's
Afghanistan.
That's called a warmonger.
His stated position.
Has he come out against...
His stated position is not to leave 80,000 troops in Iraq.
Has he come out? Yes, it is. That is his stated position.
He said 60 to 80,000.
That's right.
After his 16 months?
Yeah.
No?
That's what he said.
Yeah.
And has he come out against George Bush's trying to strong-arm Iraq right now for a continued military presence in Iraq as the Bush administration right now? I haven't heard a single word.
No, in fact, his anti-war stance has become more weak and more equivocal as the campaign has
gone. He would also
go
into Pakistan and...
Yes.
And
well,
then, of course...
Okay, but
These are large points.
No, I didn't say it was quibbles. Oh. But I do need to press you for your source that he's going to leave 80,000 troops after his 16 months.
I got it from his website. He very clearly stated it on his website.
You have to send me the link.
I will. Okay. If it's still there, you know.
All right, let's see if we can get another call. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Hi. My concern is that America is not made stronger by the top presidential candidate. It's by local elections. And there was no encouragement from, he says, a change and everything. But the change is getting people in their local elections to know who's running locally.
That's right.
And that's the only way America's going to be strong and get corrected. And that's the only way change is going to happen. I saw none of that. I forgot the other one.
What do you mean by that exactly? America's got to get strong.
Bailey, if you want change happens locally. And all these people went to the polling, and they voted for Obama, and they probably went and voted Democratic across the ballot. And did they know who was running locally as much as they knew about Obama and about the fact he was going to have a dog if he won or anything like that?
I'm sure a lot of people didn't know who they were picking locally. And it's dangerous when you just have a whole bunch of people going to vote and they don't know who they're voting for.
It's a good point.
No, I think it's a really good point. I mean, and I think that this is a transition in which, you know, looking into the 09 city council elections, you know, we have to really be able to challenge a lot of these, you know, city council people, you know, in terms of what's going to be happening locally. You know, and you can definitely see that in the whole entire term limits debate that happened in mm-hmm. the city in itself. You know, the city council folded. Mm-hmm. You know, so
it was a coup d'état.
It was a coup d'état. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's kind of funny to me because I noticed in, at least in my neighborhood, I live in Corpus City, the Bronx, a lot of the local activists were attempting to, a lot of people running locally were attempting to kind of shape their campaign similar to Obama. They were kind of using the same fonts and the same kind of photo, you know, type of things. And, you know, there was like, you know, Kevin Powell, you know, had an insurgency campaign, you know, out in Bedford-Stuyvesant, you know, they attracted a lot of the, you know, young hip hop heads, you know, and certainly there has to be a lot of space in terms of people kind of going into local politics. But, you know, another thing, too, that I really want to talk about, too, is just like, what about the need for us to even talk about, if we're talking about locally, creating basis of power that's outside of the electoral arena? And I think that's the conversation that if we have this historical moment, that we can really start talking and start talking about having in terms of really kind of extending and developing that type of power that can go beyond sort of bourgeois democracy and into actual real power. I don't have a game plan for that yet, but that's something I think that, you know, we need to really kind of be thinking about, particularly in this time of economic crisis, where we are going to be challenged to really kind of figure out how we're going to be able to survive and how we're going to be able to thrive in this society. Our political work, therefore, becomes a question of how do we kind of, like, create these kind of alternative institutions that can, like, really kind of hold together communities. You know, so I think a lot of that stuff really needs to be put on the table. So I think Carla made a really good point. Mm.
Okay, on the question of Iraq, I readily acknowledge that it's not going to be as easy for Obama as he has promised us to get the troops out of there, because it's going to create a power vacuum which is not going to be acceptable to the people who really run this country.
And it would mean the loss of oil revenues.
Yeah, well, yes, that's exactly right. So, well, I don't even think it's a question of oil revenues so much in terms of a windfall for, Exxon and the big oil companies. I think it's a question of strategic control of the oil to shore up American power. I just want to say for the record, I am passing Russell Dale my card with my email address. And I want you to send me the documentation. I'm not questioning your facts.
I just want
the documentation that his plan actually calls for permanently leaving 80,000 troops in Iraq, because I had not heard that. I thought that he was talking about, apart from maybe a couple of divisions, getting them all out within 16 months. Not that he's necessarily going to do that, but I thought that's what his plan was officially calling for. So I want you to send me that.
I will.
Very good. Okay. Send me that fact. Send me that documentation. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I really dig the show, and just was driving up First Avenue. Can you hear me all right on my phone?
Yes.
And there was like a couple of thousand people on First Ave and St. Mark's, sort of like blocking the intersection and chanting, and it was just really, a great experience to be there, you know, and it was like for like 45 minutes, no traffic could get through. And then, you know, some cop cars showed up and they got people out of the intersection, but it was just really, really fun to be there. I just really, I don't know, feel that a real sense of hope, you know, right now that things can get a lot better in this country.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks
for that report from the East Village. WBAI, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Wow. And then, first of all, Marisol, that quote was from Lenin, not Marx.
Marisol, your quote was from Lenin, apparently.
Yeah.
I thought it was Karl Marx.
No, no, we'll look it up. We'll look it up.
Oh, okay.
Satan Revolution, I believe. All right, number two. I have a problem with this whole thing because since everybody's going gaga over Obama waving American flags, especially in Grant Park. I mean, how hard is it going to be organize these people to want to go beyond the bounds of capitalism, to break with the Democrats and to come to terms that the Democrats are also the party of big money and capitalism.
Exactly.
That's it.
That they're the party of slavery, World War One, World War Two. You know, need I go on?
Okay, but, you know, I don't know if you've been paying attention to what we've been saying over these airways for the past several weeks. We've been discussing this matter, but do you acknowledge that you've just corrected Mary Saul. We'll check up on that and see if, I should say that the initial, it looks like you're right. It looks like it was from the State and Revolution by Lenin. So
yeah.
There you are. You've corrected us. But I hope you'll also note that we corrected you a couple of weeks back because you had called in.
Yes.
Okay, very good. All right.
Yes,
we're even.
All right, so let's move on and take a couple of phone calls more. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down your radio, please. Turn down your radio. And by the way, while she's turning down the radio, I'll just point out that what we corrected the previous caller on was that he had said that before 1932, when Roosevelt was elected, workers were taking over factories and shutting down cities, and then they all got bought off by the Democratic Party and went to sleep when FDR came in. In fact, it worked exactly the opposite way. Everybody was just sunk down in despair before 32, and then after he got in for the next 4 years, there was a huge upsurge of labor militancy in the country.
Well, you also had the banking crisis after that, so, yeah. I mean, in 32 and 33.
Yes, but the worst years of the Depression were 32 and 33.
Yeah.
Right. 33, yeah. WBAI, you're on the air.
This is Millie Mitchell, the Zimby's mom.
Oh, hey.
Oh, hi. Calling from South Carolina.
Hey, Mom.
Hi, Zimby. I just want to put my input in. I was listening to Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, and he, and all his comments was, we will do it, and we will do it. It's no more I. And that's what I have to say. What do you think about that? He's trying to bring everybody together, and he cannot do it alone.
I mean, first of all, hi, Mom. How long did it take you to vote down there?
Oh, it took me 2 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay.
On a small island that I live on. I didn't know that there were that many people on this little island called Guatemala Island.
I think a lot of things. I mean, I think one thing for me is that within the context of the optimism that's contained, you know, there is that sense of a we, and there is a sense of that, you know, we can put it into a certain direction. Now, the question that I think it has is that how much Obama is going to be twisted and turned by the things that he has to do because he's going to be entering into a huge crisis and. You know, and there's going to be all sorts of pressure on him, and people are going to be whispering in his ear, he has to do this and that. And I think that, you know, it is up to us and to the we, you know, whether it's Obama or whoever else, to really kind of push the agenda forward. You know, and I think that's important. But I think that in terms of, I mean, again, I think that it's really important to really note that as a candidate and as a person, I mean, it's really interesting that he's actually opening the space up. And I think that's really kind of important. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I think that that's going to be leading to a whole type new sensibility and new expectations of which people really have, you know, really have a different level of expectations in this country and what's possible, you know. So. All right.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Pleased to meet you, man.
Hey, okay.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Shall we take another call? WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi, Bill. I had some news for you regarding Chase Bank. I was able to put an executive from Chase Bank on the witness stand this past Monday and got him to admit that many of Chase credit card agreements are not valid. that they do not have signed agreements with the consumer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, in what context were you able to put a Chase executive on the witness stand?
I went to court with Chase Bank. I have been fighting them about a $45 overage charge for 2.5 years now.
As a plaintiff or an attorney?
As a pro se attorney.
Uh-huh.
And I went to court. They put the witness on the stand. I was able to cross-examine them.
Mm-hmm.
And for 2.5 years now, they've never answered my interrogatories
mm-hmm.
about whether or not they have signed agreements. I was able to
with
ask...
Whom? With whom? Signed agreements with who?
With the consumer, with the credit card holder.
Yeah, so what does this mean? It means all the credit card debt is bogus and you can just write it off?
Possibly it is.
Uh-huh.
And don't be so flippant about it.
It's a little bit, it's not exactly on topic, is it?
No, it's not on topic.
Oh, okay. Well, then we're going to move on then. WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
Okay. Speak up, you're on the air.
I'm listening on the net, so I'm a little bit behind schedule there.
Okay.
Well, I just wanted to say hello to everyone, and I'm out here in Chicago world, you know, like,
all right.
Michigan. Hey. And it was quite an amazing little feeling out here.
I'll bet.
And much as the naysayers and much as the poo-pooers might want to say about this election, it still put a lot of Republicans out of work. And let me tell you, they're going to be flipping McDonald's burgers, man, because, you know, Republicans are on
a wish.
Yeah. And you're worried about, capitalism? Capitalism is fried, baked, burnt, and in the garbage.
No, I don't know about that.
All the money has been stolen. And everybody knows it.
Capitalism is a very, very resilient virus. It really has a way of riding out the worst of crises. Sometimes I think it's indestructible, or at least it's going to persist until it takes the whole rest of the planet down with it. But
and mind you, when Bush came to power, Robert Rubin had a cushy job in Citigroup for the past so many years, and now he's coming back into the government, probably under Obama. So the revolving door doesn't lead from government to McDonald's. It leads from government to Citibank and other happy large
there's
corporations.
There's not too many billionaires on the unemployment line either.
All right. It's almost 1:30 in the morning here on listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. This has been the Morris Orthodox Radio Crusade with me, Bill Weinberg, joined in the studio with Marisol Ruiz, Kazembe Balagun, Russell E. Dale, Yana Ridanova, and Bill Conline. And ostensibly, Weaponry with Tom Whisker is coming up next, but I don't see hide or hair of him. So why don't we take a musical break and decide if we want to go into some extra innings if Tom doesn't show up, or maybe by the time we get out of this musical break, he'll be here. So stand by. Actually, that's not the one I wanted to play. I wanted to play to play this one. This is the one I wanted to play.
You're going to have
this for smoke? Yeah, I wanted to in a second.
And in these uptight times, hardcore funk.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.